Good morning and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Good morning, Chris Vandercook.
Good morning, Beth Ann. Immigration has special relevance in Hawaii because for any number of reasons, yeah?
Because we all came here from someplace else.
Well, that being one of them, yes.
And many people would say that about the United States in general. But
they better say that about the United States.
Yeah, and we've seen how that's taken on a completely different meaning in very, very recent days. Now, outrage heard across the nation over President Trump's executive order on immigration affecting seven majority Muslim countries includes Hawaii. Later today, many groups, including the Muslim Association of Hawaii, the American Immigration Lawyers Association, the Interfaith Alliance Hawaii, and the American Civil Liberties Union of Hawaii, will be issuing a joint response to the executive order. Beyond the positioning of opposition, we wanted to get a clearer picture of immigration in Hawaii. We called immigration attorney Claire Hannes, who's in our studio this morning. Thank you for coming in.
That's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
On the face of it, just hearing about the executive order was enough to get a lot of people to turn up to the airport in Honolulu over the weekend and to chant and to be there to, you know, welcome people and say, you know, this isn't us, in effect. But really, truly, what does immigration look like in Hawaii? Are we haven't really been a destination point for a lot of refugees. Maybe people choosing to move here through other means, but from refugee status, what are we looking at in
Hawaii? Well, looking back at what the executive order that was issued late Friday night, it has a curious title, Protecting the Nation from Foreign Terrorist Entry into the United States. And it effectively barred all refugee admissions for 120 days, barred all Syrian admissions indefinitely, and barred admissions from nationals of seven countries for at least a 90-day period. And so it was issued late Friday night. There were immediate challenges and demonstrations that took place on Saturday. And in cities where populations of those, especially the seven affected countries, were much larger. Now, as you said, in Hawaii, we don't have a lot of refugee resettlement happening here, although there is some. There are a number of local nonprofit organizations that do refugee resettlement, and there are a number of families that were scheduled to come here who were in the pipeline who have been held up.
And Claire, are we talking about handfuls of people here?
We're talking
or more.
Well, I mean, as far as people lives directly impacted by this ban, we're talking about handfuls.
But when we start to talk about universities and faculty and students who are foreign-born,
sure,
that begins to look like a bigger picture.
That does begin to look like a larger picture because it's basically many people in our state who are dual nationals, Iranian and the U.S. I know a number at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. There are questions about green card holders and impacts on them, and then there's larger questions that people have and larger fears from people from the countries that aren't directly enumerated in this order, who are just concerned about traveling and being stuck outside of the United States.
The idea that you can go but you can't come back.
Sure, or you might not want to, or you might not be able to come back, and people are really, obviously fearful of that. There have also been reports that United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, which is kind of the benefit end of the Department of Homeland Security, is holding up green card adjustment of status cases for people in the United States from those seven countries. And so you would normally say in Hawaii, if a U.S. citizen marries a foreign national, it takes about 3 months generally, start to finish, to get a green card. Now, for people from those seven countries, they are being interviewed as scheduled, but then the cases are being held indefinitely. So, and we don't know how many people that might involve in our community. Individual attorneys who have those cases would know, of course, but many people, because attorneys are often expensive or out of reach of people, they do it themselves. And then these aren't the groups of people that would be comfortable speaking out about what's happening to them. Their number one concern is protecting and guarding their family, and there's, of course, a huge fear of backlash for people who come forward. We've heard reports from the Muslim community of an increase in hate. I don't know if it would rise to hate crimes, but definitely intimidation in local Muslims. And so I think the president's actions really have emboldened people who are afraid of the other. And some of those people we know have dangerous and violent tendencies. And these are homegrown, right? These aren't people from from the seven affected countries.
So later today, when these 21 organizations, including several you belong to, come together to issue a joint statement, that statement will be regarded as it is. But what happens afterward? What are you planning to do afterward in Hawaii to connect what's going on in Hawaii, which is not a lot in the way that other states may be looking at refugee resettlement, to not only just engage Hawaii, but to make Hawaii part of the conversation? Right. What happens after today?
Well, we're continuing to monitor Customs and Border Protection and international arrivals at the airport. And working through the congressional offices so that if there are reports, we can have attorneys on hand to provide assistance to those people. We're also getting the word out to the community, again, that if people do have family members who may be trapped outside of the United States, we'd like those people to come forward to attorneys. And there are legal challenges all over the United States to this. We could mount a similar case in Hawaii.
You're talking lawsuits here.
Lawsuits, exactly. And there are templates. I mean, attorneys, you know, nationwide have really done a beautiful job coming forward and banding together and sharing information. So we wouldn't have to recreate the wheel. There are templates available that we could take into federal court immediately. And then also just to monitor what's happening on the national level and get the word back to the local community and try to dispel any myths and advise people as we can as far as what their risks of travel are.
You mentioned that there have been, if not threats, but certainly intimidation within the Muslim community and other communities that might feel it in some way. For a lot of people, thinking about Hawaii in those terms is really difficult. I mean, we have this idea of ourselves as being warm and welcoming and, you know, aloha for all. But that's clearly not what we're seeing. And as you also say that, you know, these are homegrown people. These are not people who have come to Hawaii who are doing some of these things. How then do you begin to stem that, not just what's happening with national policy, perhaps, but what's happening in Hawaii with the way perhaps we are changing?
Right. Well, I think, you know, as the nation is quite polarized right now, I think Hawaii is polarized to some degree as well. We don't have the kind of redneck yahoos showing up as happened in demonstrations, say in Arizona or some other states. But I think there are people still who are very fearful of the other and things who are different, who voice opposition in other ways. And when we like to think of ourselves as all embracing and welcoming. But if you look at the comment section in the newspaper after an article, say about the protest at the airport, or if there's anything that's ever pro-immigrant in the newspaper, there are always nasty comments following about really kind of knee-jerky, you know, we need to keep ourselves safe. These people are potentially dangerous and causing harm to us, where there's absolutely no evidence
so
of that.
So how do you look at that as being something that could be worked on in Hawaii to change some of those ideas or to be able to broaden knowledge or perspective?
Yeah, I think that's where this conversation and just engaging. Maybe we've talked to some organizations about trying to put the face of the refugee in our community and the, you know, the success stories. Refugees often do phenomenally well economically once they get settled because they are so motivated. They've given up so much, and many of them are highly educated in their own countries. They just can't live there anymore, and they come to the United States and they add to the fabric of our society, and many success stories. And so maybe trying to get those stories out so much so that refugees aren't seen as people who are here to either do harm or take from us, but people who are here to give and contribute as well. And it's the fact that the refugee ban affects refugees from all countries around the world. It's not just Middle Eastern or Muslim countries. We really need to think about what that means and what that says about us as a nation by not being willing to open our doors to people who we have promised safe haven to, whose lives are now thrown into limbo.
Claire Hannis, thank you so much for being here this morning.
Thanks for the chance.
We'll hear more this afternoon. Claire Hannis is an immigration attorney at Damon Key, Leong Kupchak Hastert in Honolulu. She's also past Hawaii chapter chair of the American Immigration Lawyers Association and is also a founding member of the Hawaii Coalition for Immigration Reform. She says she stands firmly opposed to President Trump's executive order blocking entry of refugees and travelers from 7 predominantly Muslim countries because she says they are unconstitutional, illegal, and cruel.